Hi everyone, this is Tim. Welcome to North and South Podcasts. And today, it's a great honour to have back on the podcast Kieran, who was on several weeks ago. And we had a fantastic in-depth discussion about life, its meaning, spiritual breakthroughs, a history of trauma, and about making yourself a better person. And we did a long podcast and we only got through barely half the story, so we're going to complete this today. And I just want to thank Kieran for making time for coming on, because I know that she's very, very busy indeed. So thank you very much, Kieran. So Kieran, your full name is Kieran Shokhar Asen. Is that pronounced correctly again?
Yes, that's fine.
Thank you.
Great with your Scouse accent. Yeah.
So how are you doing? And do you want to just briefly introduce what you do again? Just for anyone who didn't listen to the first podcast, and just to remind people.
Okay, sure. So I'm very well. Thank you for asking, Tim. So what do I do? So I am a transcendental therapist. Transcendence means to overcome. So I teach people how to overcome their perceived or their real negative experiences. I say perceived because, you know, the mind is a very tricky thing. Some people can go through an experience, and especially when we're younger, and you can feel that certain things are done to you, when in fact it wasn't the case at all. So that's why I say perceived. That doesn't mean it's wrong or right, by the way, just not to anybody who's listening. So what I do is basically I specialize in helping people access their own inner power, teaching them what it is to be powerful. And so I specialize in things, you know, mental and emotional health. I teach people how to heal their depression, suicidal thoughts, anything that is mental and emotional, which is stopping that particular person from living the life that they want to live. And it could be affecting their work, their relationships, their everyday general life as well. But I come at it from a very unique perspective, as you're aware. So I come at it from a spiritual perspective. And there's a lot of misunderstanding around that. So yeah, but that in an essence is what I do. I help people with their lives and you know, and accessing what they want.
That's a good summary. And just to summarise the previous episode, which I think we did about 6 weeks ago now, do recommend people listen to that to find out where Kieran's come from. We're going to talk more about what she's doing now and in recent years. But basically, to summarise the last episode, Kieran, you had a spiritual awakening as young as the age of two. You've got a history of emotional, physical and sexual abuse and trauma. You've run away from home several times. You've had further spiritual experiences in relation to God and a higher power. There's been suicide attempts. You've had issues with well-being and mental health, problems with addiction. And you then did 6 weeks of talk and therapy that helped you to make a breakthrough. And since then, you've become your own therapist. You went on a spiritual pilgrimage to Australia to undo previous conditioning. And you learned that you were a very good public speaker and someone who could really communicate well with others when you were doing a talk in Liverpool. And as you summarised, and as we've summarised in the previous pod, you've lived quite an unconventional life and quite a difficult life, but your experiences spiritually are quite far from what we might call the mainstream. And I think you said last time, I don't know if it was after the podcast, that I'm a little bit more mainstream than you, but I also did in the introduction to the last podcast that people need to hear your story, because it is an important one. And there's a great book called The Life of Pi. I don't know if you've read that, about the young boy who finds himself stranded at sea, etc. And there's parts of that where you think, is this guy really expecting people to believe that these kinds of things happen to him? But at the end of the book, he said they did. And I need to tell people about these kinds of spiritual experiences, and I think that's part of your journey. Now, one thing, I'll let you come back. Is there anything you want to come back on now, just before we get started? Because I wanted to just revisit your issues with addiction, because I think we touched on them, that those issues with smoking, weight gain, physical looks. But is that a good summary of where we've been? And do you want to talk about your addiction problems next?
Yeah, everything you've said so far is correct. But I'd like to just make a few points, so that's okay. Okay, just like as you said, a few things, just jotted a few things So here's just what I want to say in relation to what you said. I agree with everything you've said, Tim. I just want to reinforce a few things. So, for example, becoming your own therapist. I want people to be aware that when Tim says that, I've done it in a very professional way. I'm not an average human being. Now, I don't say that lightly. I don't say that because I think I'm better than anybody else. I'm not, but I'm definitely very unique. What that means is that I have a very powerful observation. I perceive in a way that most human beings don't. I'm not your normal average human. I am definitely exceptional. So when we talk about, becoming your own therapist, that isn't for everybody. Because some people, they just don't have that ability. You in life, you have to know what are your strengths and what are your challenges and work within those parameters. And unfortunately, there are people who try to be their own therapist and they get themselves in a big mess. So just be aware of that, guys. If you're listening to this, that may or may not be for you. I saw professional help when I was young. I'm 48 going on 49. So when I was in my 20s, I did seek out professional help through the NHS and I got those 6 weeks of talking therapy. And the breakthrough I had was that I did not realize that talking about my pain and suffering would help me to the depth at which it did. I wasn't aware of that 20 odd years ago. And so if you're somebody and you're listening to this and you're thinking, how's that going to help? Talking about what you've gone through with a person that you may or may not know is so helpful because it allows you to make sense of what has happened. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with trauma is that people don't seem to understand that it is actually a part and parcel of the human experience, okay? And thus people need to understand that it's not abnormal to go through trauma. It's actually the opposite. It's actually normal to go through trauma. At the moment, globally, there's a huge conference taking place online called a global conference, and I'm not sure of the cost of it, but so trauma is becoming a huge thing, and people like Gabor Maté, he's a well-known lead man in the in this field. I don't know what his field of specialties is. I'm sorry, I only come across him a few times online on YouTube, but I know that he's very well renowned, and there's about 15, 20 different specialists holding this conference at the moment. So I just want to make that point first of all that becoming your own therapist isn't for everybody. And if it's not for you, don't be disheartened. All it means is that you're not ready to take on that role yet and that you should go and seek professional help, whether it be psychologist, a counselor, an alternative therapist, or somebody qualified. And then once you become stronger, you can take on that role because you'll be able to see better what works for you and what doesn't. So that's the first thing. The other thing I wanted to say, unconventional experiences, when it comes to spirituality, I just want to quickly make this point. Spirituality is actually our primary state of being. A human being is made of five components: mental, emotional, spiritual, physical, and sexual. Okay? All those five components combined make a human being. When any of those components are not fully functioning, you will start to see imbalances in your life. So, spiritual is actually the primary state because we are not human. And that is very clear. And I think I mentioned this in our previous podcast, in that we are only here for a transitionary period of time. The planet is a school. This is what I would class it as. We all come here, each and every one of us, to learn our life lessons. And we really suffer when we don't know what those lessons are, when we don't learn those lessons, because it then has a gap in your and how your mind and your emotions function. And then later in life, this is where people actually become unstuck. So it all happens as a part of the learning and growth process. So spirituality is actually your primary state of being because we are energy. We're energy, and we don't actually die. And I think I mentioned that last time. We can only transmutate. So we come here. As in each of our bodies is an energy construct. And when that energy construct finished, the body remains names and the energy construct leaves and it goes back to where it's come from. So I want people to be aware of that, that being human is not your primary state. Being energetic, spiritual is actually your primary state. And if you actually, this is why more and more human beings are having spiritual awakenings. It's more reason why more and more people are beginning to explore spirituality, because for the longest time, I think a lot of people have felt that there's something other, but they just can't put their finger on what it actually is. And it has with them all their lives. And this is what it is. It's actually spiritual. Now, you have to be very careful because over the past 10, 15 years, you know, there are people in this world, unfortunately, that do not want people to become consciously awake because it empowers you. It makes you very powerful. It's helped me immensely on my journey. This is why I've become such a tough cookie and I kick butt, you know. Because you can see what's real and what's not, and you won't put up with the nonsense anymore. So be aware that there's a lot of spiritual stuff out there, especially if you're a fan of YouTube. All I will say to you is please, please be discerning. That means make wise choices when choosing to listen, to follow anybody that is spiritual, because there's a lot of spiritual people who claim to be that, but they have never done their own inner work. They've never healed their own trauma. They've never understood themselves or reached a point where they understand themselves. And that causes, as you can imagine, a lot of dysfunction for people listening to those type of people or trying to work with that type of people. It misleads them. So just be careful. That's all I want to say on that.
Yeah, no, I think they're valid points. And I think Gabor Mate, you can look at some of his lectures and talks on YouTube. I think he is a specialist in trauma. And there's a lot of people out there as well who often think, oh, trauma, I've never really had traumatic experiences, like capital T trauma, that you might associate with adverse childhood experiences. But often people go through lots of mini traumas in their lives and don't really process or deal with it. And even people who say, oh, I had a good upbringing, etc., there can be a lot of trauma there that hasn't really been processed or addressed. And I did a Buddhist retreat for the previous 2 days where they were regularly talking about like past lifetimes and future lifetimes. And we've had people on in the past like Kevin Morris, who's an angelic Reiki teacher. And he talks about like future lives and past lives. And a lot of people switch off when they hear this and go, oh, that sounds a little bit too fantastical. But by accepting the possibility of different things, we actually open the gateway to improving this life. And I think that's one of the important things about understanding something like karma, for example. By trying to achieve good karma in this life or future lives, as Buddhists might say, you're actually improving this life now anyway. And that's why spiritual awakenings or whatever you might want to call them, breakthroughs. I've known people who've had terrible relationships with close family members, and then one day they just go, I need to change this. And they just change, and all of a sudden the dynamic changes. And you can make these breakthroughs really on a daily basis if you look for them and if you're willing to do the work, as you said. And you're absolutely right about this idea of like doing your own research on YouTube. You've got to be very careful. But the idea of personal development, spiritual development, for example, like CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, is once you learn the processes, you then apply them to yourself and you become more enlightened and become a better person because you internalize these things. And I thought you put that really, really well. Now, your issues with addiction in the past, do you want to talk to us about what those issues were, how they manifested, and how bad a time that was for you? We did touch on this in the previous episode. So do you want to discuss those in a bit more detail?
When you've gone through the level of abuse that I went through, which was very intense, and having said that, I mean, there's a lot of people on this planet who have had it and who at the moment have it way worse than I ever did. And I always say to my clients, you know, look, you're going to always be sitting in life somewhere. You'll always be sitting in the middle. There'll always be people who are better off than you in all different variety of ways. And there'll always be people that are way worse off than you. Okay. And so when I went through my trauma, you know, so just to give you, just for those of you who are new and don't know my story, So I grew up in a family where I was the eldest child. I was born into a family where my father came from immense trauma. He was physically abused immensely by his father, which is my paternal grandfather. And my mother also came through a lot of trauma as well. So I had two parents who were carrying heavy trauma. Now, they both belong to, a time in history. They're both in their, early 70s, mid 70s. A lot of parents, elderly people of that age, come from a background where they've never dealt with their trauma because it wasn't a thing when they were a kid. You just picked yourself up and you got on with it. And if you were like, half dead, nobody gave a crap. That there was not, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have the knowledge that we have right now. Or we had the knowledge, but it wasn't widely available. So, I always say to people that trauma is something that which is passed down through evolution, through the family lineage, and you'll often find that what you're suffering with is a byproduct of what your parents have suffered with, also both of them. And it can be a combination of both of their trauma and your own trauma, or it can be predominantly their trauma that you're carrying. It can all be wonderful and a mixture of all kinds of stuff. So I went through a lot. I used to get beaten up a lot when I was a child. I'm a very intelligent person, probably verging on being a prodigy, and my parents were not aware of that. So they took my intelligence as being naughty. So I'd get physically punished a lot, slapped around a lot, put down a lot. I was told I was a piece of shit. I was told that I would never become anything. Yeah, it was horrid. It was really nasty. And, it really forced me to, I isolate myself, because when you're going through so much pain and suffering and you're so young, I mean, it started one probably when I was probably a young child, probably 4 or 5 years old, is when I started, maybe a bit younger. And it was coming from every angle, from my father, from my grandfather, from my mother as well. So this family was really not a family for children. Let's put it that way. They should not have been any children born in that family. And so, in order to cope, like many of you, I developed addictions. And that's why we do that. We develop addiction because we don't know what else we can do, because we can become so lost in our pain and suffering. And we just want the pain to go away. We don't realize, I mean, I didn't when I was younger. I mean, I'm talking about now, I'm 14, almost 49 now. So I'm talking about my late teens, 20s, and my 30s. Especially before my 30s, I didn't realize that, you can heal your pain and suffering. So what I used to do was, I used to self-medicate. Where, I started smoking when I was 16 at school. I went to Notre Dame High School, and some of you Scousers will know that. And so, it was all fun and games in a lot of ways. But I remember having my first cigarette, in slagging off class and behind the sports hall smoking cigarettes and nearly choking to death. And all my friends, like, laughing their heads off at me. And then, as I started to get older, the first time I went to a nightclub was when I was probably in my early 20s, because my parents were very strict. And even then, I did it like I snuck out, and they didn't know that I was going to a nightclub. I took all my clothes and changed my clothes on the way out. I went out with one set of clothes, got changed into something else. And so what I want to say about, addiction is that when you go through a lot of pain and suffering, addiction is quite normal, because that pain and suffering has to go somewhere, because it's an energy. You want to, you want to dispel it. You want to get rid of it. You don't want to feel it because it's so uncomfortable. So yeah, so I went through lots of different addictions: alcohol, marijuana. I did a lot of cocaine when I was younger. I did a lot of things. Luckily, I don't have an addictive personality, in that I'm somebody that will do something, I'll take it right to its brink, and then all of a sudden I'll go, okay, yeah, I'm done with that, and then I'll just stop, and that will be it. And I know, I'm very aware that most people don't have that ability, that most people probably go over the edge, or they'll just carry on. They don't have the ability to just stop. So addiction tends to go hand in hand with abuse. What do you want to say on that, Tom? What are your thoughts?
I think addictive personalities are an issue, because there are some people who can develop addiction, possibly because they've got unresolved trauma. They might be neurodiverse, might have mental health issues, well-being issues, and I think that they can find themselves more embroiled in something that they can't extricate themselves from. But I think you're right. I think that some people can dip into things and dip out, but some people can't. And trauma is an important part of it, but also like the kind of importance of meaning, identity, peer pressure, and particular groups that you're in at the time. You know, it can be very difficult. I mean, I went right through all of my education without mixing with people who took drugs, illegal drugs, regularly. And I was very lucky for that because you've got a young mind and, you know, you don't really think about what you're doing at the time. And all of a sudden you can be into things. And I know people who start smoking when they're young and still doing it 30, 40 years later and just can't stop. And it's a very, very powerful thing, addiction. And I often look at people and I was driving the other day and I was thinking, I can see why people drink and smoke and stuff. It just gives you a little bit of fun in the present, but it's not ultimately helping you in the medium to long term. And I think that when that becomes a problem and when you identify it as a problem, it can be very, very hard. Some people never identify it. It can be very, very hard to get out of there. So I think that with a history of trauma, I think you're far more likely to get embroiled in that stuff. And some people just can't get out of them. And I've done a few podcasts before on addiction, alcohol and the 12 steps, which is a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I find very, very interesting. But since 2008, because of my genetic illness, I haven't drunk any alcohol and I don't do any illegal drugs. And I was kind of happy when I gave up alcohol when I was 28, 29, because I felt like my hand was forced. And I just feel like I'm a much better person for it today. So I think it's interesting. I think it's very easy. And also, there's a lot of people who think addiction is just about like illegal substances or legal substances like alcohol and tobacco. But food can be a big addictive problem. Certain types of kind of self-destructive personality types can be a big, big problem as well. So addiction's a very, very wide-ranging thing. And in chasing little dopamine hits, in trying to defend yourself, the way that people often defend themselves often alienates them from other people. And it can make building relationships in the future very, very different as well. But it's a minefield. And I can understand with your history why you used those things to kind of get through it. But fortunately for you, you've come out the other side.
I also say to you, okay, something about, you know, about the whole concept of addiction. The reason why I personally learn, you know, that people go into addiction is because in this reality, when we're born in this reality, nobody tells you. No parent, no teacher, no friend. Nobody tells you what is the purpose of human life, how to live it, how to excel as being a human. It's not talked about, and it should be, and especially in schools. And it's not, because, you know, and there's a reason for that. You know, when you don't understand what it is to be human, when you don't understand how the whole thing works, why you're here, and, you know, the fact that you are, it is guaranteed for every human being that comes here, you are going to go through challenges because you're here to learn. And if you're here to learn, if you understand the concept of human life, that you are actually here to learn and that you are in this bodysuit, regardless of the color of your skin, regardless of your gender, all of that has been chosen on purpose because it has this huge impact on the human experience. So if you come in as a Caucasian male, well, you're going to have a certain type of experience as opposed to having, say, you say you're an Indian woman, then you're going to have a different experience. And it's all part of the journey. And so from my personal experience, what I see with addiction is people turn to things, and it can be anything, rightly said, Tim. It can be food, it can be sex, it can be exercise, it can be anything. It doesn't have to be something negative. And normally how I would class addiction is something that a human being uses to avoid actually looking at themselves and what is actually the issue. That's the core of addiction. And for whatever reason, you may not want to look at the issue because you are not ready to look at it. Because it takes time. You've got to be in the right frame of mind to look at your pain and suffering. It's not something you just do because one day you think, oh, yeah, come on, I'll do that then. No, you've got to, because it's tough. It's not easy. So sometimes you're not ready to look at, your pain and suffering. The other reason why people go into addiction, it's too much. It's overbearing. They can't deal with the pain. They just want the pain to go away. And I can totally relate to that. Another reason is because they don't know what to do. They actually don't know what's wrong with them. They don't know that they have trauma. All they know is that something's really shit and it's horrendous and it's getting worse and they just want it to go away. So there's a multitude of reasons, okay? But the underlying concept of addiction is that you are using something to distract your attention from what is the actual problem, what is the cause, what is the issue. Because you see, nobody tells you, and if they did tell you this, it would actually stop you from going into addiction, which is if all children born on this planet were given the blueprint of what it is to be human and why they're here, addiction would never exist because you would be prepared that you would know, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to get challenged. It's going to be gut-wrenchingly difficult. It doesn't mean that I'm hated. It doesn't mean that I'm alone. It doesn't mean that I'm not loved. It means that I'm here to master certain things, which I have to overcome, which will actually make me stronger and wiser, which will, in the long term, put me in better stead to deal with being human. And that doesn't happen, you see. So this is where addiction is right. And also a lot of things that people use for addiction, for example, like sugar, drugs, and even exercise. A lot of these things, the truth of them, a lot of people don't understand that obviously certain things are very dangerous. I mean, for example, there's a lot of people in the past 20 odd years that have died from overexercise because they want to look a certain way. Because they think they have to look that way. And if they don't look that way, there's something wrong with them. Men and women, by the way, not just women. There's a lot of men having heart attacks who go to these gyms, who pump the living daylights out of their muscles, and they can't even run 10 minutes down the road because they're carrying that much bulk that within 5 minutes they're out of breath and they have a heart attack. That's a form of addiction. So I wanted to make that distinction.
Yeah, I think it's important, and I think mobile phones and technology also do that. They kind of fill in those moments we have in the day for possible just turning the lens and self-reflection. And everything is about denying you spending true time with yourself and your own mind. And I think it is very dangerous because ultimately you need to be thinking about what you're doing and why you're doing it each day. And a lot of these things that we do, and it's not just addictions, a lot of the stuff we do all day. People go to work for money to survive and think that it's okay to go to a job they don't like because that's just the way the world is. And you go in, you do that, and that allows you to live, etc. And there's something fundamentally wrong with that. And I think one of the big issues in the modern world is, particularly with materialism, is it only takes you so far. You need to find that deeper meaning and that deeper identity. But what you just spoke there, very wise words, you seem to have a knack, I think, for picking up on things and seeing things differently. And I think that you've mentioned to me that when you speak to people, you pick up things like body language and develop intuition. Is that part of your practice as a therapist then, in terms of being able to identify things about people that they don't know about themselves?
Good question. So, to be honest with you, Tim, I don't have a choice. It's a gift that I was born with. So I became aware of this. It's very powerful. So I have this very, very intense, powerful observation ability. So when I look at a human being, it's not something I can switch on or switch off. It's there since I was born. I've had to learn to use it properly because it was driving me insane when I was a young child. It was too intense. So basically, what I can do is this. When I look at a human being, I observe them. And when I observe them, I can see, like, for example, one of my favorite things to do, I don't do it so much at the moment because I'm so busy with work and stuff, with helping people. But I used to go out a lot and just sit on a bench, and I'll just sit there and I'll just watch people. And when I watch them, I can see by just observing the person, I will see what is going on in their mind. So I will see all the things that they're aware of, that they know, that they do. And then I will also see all the things that they are not aware of. They don't know that they do it. They don't know that they're thinking it, and they don't know that they're behaving it. And I will watch it. Okay. And when I talk to people, I observe everything and everyone like a hawk. So when I talk to somebody, I'll know straight away if they're lying, if they're withholding information, if they're pretending to be something they're not, if they're not wanting to talk about something, if they're trying to hide something, if they're comfortable, if they're genuine, all of it. I'll see it all. And so I often say to my clients, don't lie to me. There's no point because I will know that you're lying. And I came across something the other day, actually very interesting. I read something called super empath, and apparently this is what super empaths do. I mean, I don't know, I don't give it a label as such. I was definitely given that for a reason. And it comes with a lot of responsibility because often I see right into it. I mean, if I want to, if I'm honest, I can read the mind of a person if I want to. I just don't do it because I don't feel that's my place to intrude on another human in that way. But when I'm working with my clients, I often have very powerful glimpses of what's going on in that person's mind. And so I see both their conscious behavior and their subconscious behavior. I see all their light, I see all their darkness, I see all their strengths and what they're challenged by. And so I see their blind side. And so this was definitely given to me to do what I'm doing, because it's invaluable. I mean, I've got to say it's very challenging because I can't switch it off. And I've had to learn to hone it and use it wisely. Because when I was younger, in the first 20 odd years of my life, I wish to God that I didn't have it. Because when you see what I see, you can't unsee it, And what it's made me do is I've become very, very picky and choosy in who I choose to be around. So obviously, I am very selective with who are my friends. I'm very selective because I read people. I mean, I am a psychopath's and a narcissist's nightmare. Because I see them a mile away. They can't hide from me, you see. And so when I meet people like that and they try to manipulate me or do anything, I just call them out straight away. And you should see their eyes like nearly pop out of their skulls, It's quite funny. But I've never ever used it in a bad way. Because I could. And if I wanted, I always say to my friends, gee, I would have made an amazing villain. I would have made an amazing super villain. But luckily, I'm a good soul. I'm here to help people. So I don't use my skills to cause, anything but help.
That's a really useful thing. I mean, that's something that like counselors and therapists are trained in anyway, to look at body language. And I did a counseling once, and the counselor would pull me up on things and say, "Do you know when you said that then, I got the impression that," and she made some very interesting observations which challenged me. And I think Carl Jung says that like everyone's got a conscious side and an unconscious side, or a shadow world, and it's like you can look into that. And as a counselor, the skill is, and as a therapist, is to look into that and get people to look at things that maybe they are not aware of. Not that they don't want to necessarily, but they're not even aware of. But it's interesting as well. I look back at older generations who just do not want to admit anything or look at anything, and I think that the modern people. I'm generalizing a lot here, but I think there's a lot more out there now where people are willing to look at things about themselves. But it's not everywhere. But I think it is starting to make inroads into kind of modern society far more than maybe it did on the part in the past. But one of the things you mentioned earlier was about, not necessarily learning in the traditional sense, but learning things for yourself. And did you find that you would read a lot and through experience learn things that you applied without necessarily needing to do a course to achieve that? Is that your experience of things?
Yeah, I am an exceptionally fast learner. So I would say that, I would say that I'm a child. I was a child prodigy. In a lot of my work, I'm a pioneer. So I'm currently writing a book. So for me, I have the ability to think outside the box. When I view anything or anyone, I look at it as in such a way that I see everything. For example, I think I said last time in my the previous podcast that when I was a child, I took apart the vacuum and put it back together again. You know, I don't have any qualifications in that. I would say I am what God created humans to be. I'm not fully there yet, but I'm well on my way, which is that human beings are created to be self-governing and to use these abilities. All human beings are gifted, every single one of us. The issue is, you mentioned it earlier, Tim, is that we're born into a world where there are so many lies and so much deception and so much truth is withheld from us. And we're put into these camps called schools, which do not really educate people to the truth of this reality. They don't empower humans at all. It's actually quite the opposite. And this is why people leave school thinking, oh, yeah, I'll get a job, you know, and I'll do this. And they go into this closed-minded, some of them, not everyone, because it doesn't work on everybody. And so, you know, and I just want to say to you, this what we're talking about now really is this concept of elevating your consciousness, elevating your awareness. So consciousness means to do things on purpose, knowing that you are doing something. Okay, it's the opposite of being on autopilot. So what you were talking about earlier, where you know these people in general, say probably 80% of the world, on autopilot, where they get up every morning, they go to the job that they hate, and they're only doing it for money, just to pay the bloody bills. That type of person is never really going to be happy in life, because you are not living the life that you were sent to live. The life that we are sent to live is to basically access our greatness. So that's what I've done. My greatness was and is that I have this ability to see beyond what is in front of me. It's like a superpower. All people have different types of superpowers. And what I chose to do was, it was very apparent that I was very gifted, very intelligent. At the moment, I have two businesses. I'm in the process of creating two more. I'm doing a lot of things. Well, I think what I was saying was, I'm very motivated to help humanity. And the reason for that is because of what I see. Since I am a young child, since I'm 2 years old, what I have seen on this planet is absolutely horrendous. It's shocking, the level of suffering that exists. It's not normal. People, you know, when I look at, I'm almost 50. And when I look at the world, we are not moving forward as a species. We are not evolving on in the way that we should be. If you look at like 50, 100 years ago, people were far more mentally and emotionally involved than what we are right now. Really, they were. And it's very scary, especially the younger, you know, the younger generations, how they lack the ability to have empathy, sympathy, compassion, self-understanding, understanding of other people. You know, one of the things I really specialize in is emotional intelligence. And most human beings don't have it. You know, emotional intelligence is the understanding, and there's three components to this, because I always, a lot of therapists even get this wrong. And these are qualified psychologists who don't even know this stuff. You know, so for example, there are three parts to emotional intelligence. The first is how you view yourself, how you interact with yourself. Most human beings never ever create a relationship with themselves, and yet the relationship with yourself is the most important relationship you're ever going to have. It's more important than the one with your parents, with your friends, with your children, and with your partners, because this life is about you and how you're navigating through it. That's it. That's all it's about. And so that's the first aspect. The second aspect of emotional intelligence is how you interact with other people, how you impact them. Are you aware of what they're feeling when you're communicating them? Are they comfortable around you? Because most people have, they're very good at understanding themselves and what they need, but they're bloody crap at understanding what their partner needs or what their children need or what their friends need. People are just oblivious, okay? But they can be very good at being self-aware, but they're not aware of other people and how they impact others. So that's the second part of emotional intelligence. And the third is how you interact with your environment. Now, most people don't even know that about emotional intelligence. Okay, and that's quite a powerful cornerstone of my work. So we were also talking about consciousness. You know, consciousness, elevating your consciousness, and one of the reasons why what I do is so powerful and so unique and so different, and why a lot of people who work with me go through far quicker transformation than working with a mainstream psychiatrist or psychologist or even counselor, is because I base my work on the fundamentals of what we are, which is energy. Things happen in this life and they happen for a reason. You know, there's a reason why people are depressed. There's a reason why people want to commit suicide. There's a reason why people are addicted to substances, whatever it might be. And we're living in a world where, you know, the governments and, you know, even medical doctors and people who are supposed to be qualified to help people, they're not listening. They're not listening to people. And that's all it really takes, actually, is to genuinely care and listen. So sometimes, you know, I look at what I've been given, and I know a lot of people will look at my life, and I know I have a lot of people that get jealous of my life because they see that I have a lot. But I don't really. I mean, everything I have, I put back into community because I am so motivated to help people because I know what people are going through, because I've gone through it myself. I know what it's like to want to kill yourself. I know what it's like to want to die. I mean, I literally really want to die, and you don't want to be here because it is, it's shit. It can be really shit because the world we live in, it's not the world that I was born into. And I know it's not the world that most people have been born into. It's changed so much. And this is why, since COVID as well, we've had so many people. Suicide rates are going through the roof globally. Mental and emotional health rates are going through the roof globally. A lot of people have not got back out into society. There's a lot of people like that that are still very comfortable with their feet under the table at home, and they're not going out. And that's not good. Because we were created, as you know, Tim, to be social beings, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think the COVID pandemic and the way that it was dealt with, obviously there's big lessons to be learned from these things, and it's very difficult at the time to know what to do and to be fully appraised of the situation. But I think COVID is going to be a little bit like what it must have been like after World War II, or maybe what it was like after the Black Death, which obviously far more people died during the Black Death. And maybe after the English Civil War, when things just went haywire for a bit. And I think we're in one of these things, but we've also got all this modern technology and social media, etc. And, you know, you can say what you like about the past. I'm not defending it. I wouldn't have liked to have been a medieval peasant, but there was a bit of certainty about what you were doing. And I think the uncertainty in the modern era, it's good in some ways that there's new opportunities available, but at the same time, there's a lot of anxiety about things. And I think COVID exposed a lot of these long-term themes. Now, just going back to what you said, you know, you've been on a journey for 15 years, a transformational journey, a true transformational journey in that time. You spoke in the last podcast about wanting to apply God's teachings, that we're all on a spiritual journey, and you talked about transitioning to a better form of human. And after COVID, a lot of things were thrown up in the air. I remember after COVID listening to like stuff saying, oh yeah, people are only going to work from home now, and people are only going to work for a few hours a week, and we need to move to a society that's based more on human needs. And you had all this, some of it was quite positive, and then within a few years, that's all like being kicked back. Oh no, we need to get back to the way it was. And it's like we don't really know where we are and where we're going. And I think that goes back to the idea of what you said, like, why are we here? What are we doing? And I always think back at the great book by Frankl about World War II. He survived the concentration camps, and afterwards he came up with a theory called logotherapy, and he said you need to find your purpose in life and you need to pursue it. That will give you the meaning to be the person that you can be. And I had Mark McDermott on earlier in the year, who's an NLP practitioner, and he says people need to say to themselves, what were you put on earth to do? Like, what's going on? What are you doing? Why are you living this life now? And it's such an important question, and we don't address it. Now, you talk about God. We talked about your idea of God as a non-traditional thing, but something that you've connected with, this idea of a higher power. So this idea of the transition to a better form of human and the spiritual journey, what does that mean for you? Is there anything new that you want to add that you haven't previously mentioned?
Well, look, it's a birthright. This is what Jesus came here to bloody do. And it really pisses me off. You know, religious people, sorry, guys, if you're a religious person, I hope I don't offend you. But I've got to say, a lot of religious people are very, very closed-minded. Okay? Jesus did not come to this planet to be worshipped. That man was a revolutionary, and there's been millions of us before him and after him. He's not the only one. And, you know, and the people of that day have jumped on that bandwagon because a lot of people have made a lot of money on this man's name. Let's get honest, okay? He didn't come here to be a bloody leader of the Christian church. He came here to kick people's butts and tell them the truth, which is that you are powerful beings. You are not the small me that you put yourself into, most of you. You're not. You are a very powerful being. Now, the reason why you never get to that, why you never access it, is because no one tells you that. Your mom and dad don't tell you. Your school doesn't definitely tell you. And so you never go through life really understanding what it is to be human. And so this is another cornerstone of the work that I do. So, you know, when you don't understand what it is to be human, then you can never reach your greatness. And let's be honest, most people would rather die than access their greatness. I'm more afraid of their greatness than anything else. And I've got to say, I was exactly the same. You know, when I was younger, the last thing I wanted to do was stand in front of a group of people and give a talk about what I now talk about. I couldn't think of anything worse. I'd rather bloody have the floor, you know, open up and swallow me up. Now you can't shut me up, because now I realize, because I'm older and wiser and I've accumulated wisdom and common sense, because I learn from my life lessons, every one of them, sometimes quickly, sometimes not so quickly, but I learn them and never not learn them. And what I've learned is that everybody's got a gift. Some people have more than one. And only you can express it, because only you have lived your life. Only you have those pearls of wisdom. So, for example, there's never been a Tim before you that's like you. And there's, when you die, when you leave this planet, there's never going to be another Tim ever again. In the whole history of the universe, no matter how long this universe exists, there will never be another one. So I always say to people, you owe it to yourself to explore what is your greatness. What the hell are you here for? Because I'm living my greatness. And that's why I have lots of businesses. Because when you connect to your greatness, what you're doing is you're connecting to God. And when you let God control your life, because you see, you have to understand what you're in control of and what you're not in control of. You are only in control of yourself, your thoughts, your feelings, how you perceive. You are not in control of the outside world. You cannot control another human being, because whatever's going on in their mind is going on regardless of whether, you know, you don't know. It's going on right in front of your face, but you don't know what's going on. So you can't control external forces. And there's a beautiful thing called the Serenity Prayer. And so, you know, and you're correct. Most people don't know. They don't know why they're here on this planet. They don't know what it is to be human. They don't know what is the purpose of life. So when you don't know these basic fundamental, don't even ask the questions, so you're not going to get the answers unless you ask. And if you don't ask the questions, you don't have the information, then, and I think I mentioned it last time, is literally being in a black room with all the lights out. And somebody says, when somebody spins you around and then says, right, go and find the exit. Can you bloody find that exit? Can you help? You don't know which way you're going. You're bumping into things. You're falling over. You're fumbling around. And that's how most human beings live their entire lives. And then they die. And that's it. So you have to want to run. Do you know we are the only bloody species that don't know what we are? A bloody frog knows it's a frog. A dog knows it's a dog. But a human being does not understand what it is to be human. I find it fascinating. I find it absolutely fascinating. And then, this is why people become so lost and ungrounded. And this is why depression happens. Depression is actually a gift, if I'm really honest. It's a way that God uses to stop you from going in the opposite direction. Because when you go into depression, you're done for. You ain't going nowhere. You're stopped. Everything is still. You've got to stop. And it does that to stop you from going further in the opposite direction, which basically leads to your self-destruction. That's what it leads to. So depression stops you from doing that, and it gives you time to figure things out. That's what it's supposed to do. But people don't are not aware of that, so they never still get to the point of what it is to be human. So being human, it's very interesting we're talking about this because I was writing something. What was I writing yesterday? Oh, I was writing a proposal to a potential client who's an international client who's in, I think they're in somewhere in Europe who wants to work with me. And I was say making this point that your greatness is your birthright. And this is what Jesus was trying to teach people. And this is why Jesus said, you will do far greater than what I can do. You think walking in water is cool? You wait till what your gifts are. And everybody has them. I see them in everybody. And so often the people I work with, I take them. I've had clients who've come to me. I work with people all over the world, but I've had people in the UK especially come to me, young men, where they're tanked up with antidepressants, antipsychotics, and they shouldn't be on those meds. And so I actually will look at their medical records. I will wean them off those meds. And all of a sudden you start to see this very intelligent young man. And I've got such a case where I helped a young man like that, and now he's self-employed, and he's making thousands of pounds on a monthly basis. And this was somebody who was in his 20s in the northeast of England, who was basically signed up by everybody, by school, by everyone. And why? Because he didn't fit into a certain box. You're not here to fit into a certain box. You've got to be you, whatever that is, and you've got to be able to be you and be proud of being you. And enjoy being you and not want to be, because it's the opposite, isn't it, Tim? And I'm sure you've seen it all your life, especially with younger people, even with older people, actually, is that people are really afraid to stand out. People don't want to accept their greatness. They don't want to accept their gifts. They want to kind of blend in with the masses. And we're not here for that. This is why we all look so bloody different. We're supposed to look different. We're not supposed to be clones of each other. We're supposed to embrace our differences and rejoice in them, not trying to make everybody like us. There's a huge shift taking place globally. It's been going on since the 60s, where humanity is really starting to awaken to the fact that we are so much more than doing a shitty little job, 9 to 5, and you're just trying to make ends meet. We are not that. We are the opposite of that. And so if you're listening to this and you're really interested in finding out what you're here for, get in contact with me. Get in contact with me and work with me, because this is what I'm here for. I'm putting myself out there for anybody and everybody on this planet, because my time is ticking. I'm not going to be here forever, and I want to help as many people as I can before I leave this planet. There is a plan to travel globally in the next couple of years, teaching as many people as I can, because I want as many people as I can to break away from this. I suppose it's a form of slavery, isn't it, really? Invisible slavery, but we don't know that we're in.
Yeah, and you were speaking very well there. I was just letting that flow, really, what you were saying, because it was brilliantly put. And it kind of leads in nicely to where we were going to conclude things in terms of what you offer now, because you just alluded about people getting in touch with you. So what can you offer people? And you've mentioned in the past as well to me about depression, anxiety, suicide, anger management, particularly with yourself and how you've overcome them. So what kind of things do you offer for people who might be interested? We'll put the details in the podcast notes, but if anyone's interested in getting in touch with you or contacting you, what kind of things do you offer now? And to those who don't, what kind of ideas would you recommend for people to look at themselves further?
Okay, so first of all, I want to make a very important statement around spirituality and mental health. Spirituality is not for people, and this is very controversial what I'm going to say, because a lot of spiritual teachers are going to get very annoyed with me, but it's true. I will be honest. Spirituality is not really for people who have issues with mental and emotional health. It's not, and here's why. When you're going through mental and emotional issues and you're suffering and you don't know, you know, you're not really in a place where you can think clearly, the information that you will get from spirituality is very confusing. You have to know your strengths and your challenges before you access that information. The amount of times people come to me because they got involved with some spiritual teacher, man or woman, and they went to them because they wanted to go around a more holistic approach to mental or emotional health. What they don't realize is many spiritual people are not qualified when it comes to mental and emotional health. They're not. They've never helped. They've never healed themselves, or they've never done any form of work. And that kind of person cannot teach you to heal. If they don't know how, they can't teach you how. So I advise anybody, before they tap into spirituality, make sure that you are mentally and emotionally strong. Because if you don't understand that information, what I find a lot with my clients is they misconstrue, especially people who use spirituality as a form of healing, okay? What happens is their mind is not working in a balanced and healthy way. That's why they're going through either depression or anxiety or whatever the mental, emotional, you know, disorder is. Okay, there's something's happened that's put you out of whack, that's put you out of balance. Now, if you go with that frame of mind and you try to study spirituality, your mind is going to distort that information. And so, for example, I'll give you an example. Trying to teach somebody what is your higher self when they're dealing with mental and emotional health issues is very confusing. What the hell does the higher self mean when you don't even know what your own self is, right? So what I advise to people is if you've already healing and you're partway through, that's fine. But if you're at the beginning of your mental and emotional health journey and you've never done any kind of therapy, I would not advise you to go into spirituality. I would advise you to find a very good mental and emotional health practitioner, first of all, and get to a point where you are in control. Because when you have mental and emotional health issues, you are not in control. You don't know what's going on. And you're at the mercy of that mental and emotional health disorder, whatever it is. So you've got to understand that it's dangerous. And this is why so many people, I see it all the time for the last 10, 15 years, that many people turn to spirituality and they become unstuck because they're very vulnerable. That's the first thing. They're in a very vulnerable state of mind. And because of that, they can't see clearly who's actually in front of them. And so they make unwise choices and they end up getting manipulated by these people, and there's many of them. So, and it confuses people. This young chap that I helped last year, he was very similar. He turned to spirituality. He was getting involved with shamans, healers, tarot readers, and when he got to me, he was such a mess, because these people, I mean, look, some of them meant well. But that's nothing to somebody who's suffering in such a debilitating way, and that these ignorant people come in and they don't know what they're doing and they just lead somebody down the garden path. It's really dangerous. You know, people can end up taking their own lives because of it, and they do. And so I really want people to be aware of that. So if you've never done spirituality before, first of all, either work with a a strong spiritual teacher who has a background in some form of therapy, who's qualified, okay? Or go to a therapist and work on that first. Get your mind strong first, okay? Then when you get to a certain point and you're comfortable and you know, discuss with your therapist, you know, where are you up to? Then go explore spirituality where you can actually handle that information and you're not going to confuse it. Because a lot of, because it's a very, it, spirituality is talking about energetic disciplines. And what a lot of mental emotional health disorders do is they distort how you take that information in and how you process it. And this is where people get their wires crossed, you know, and they go down the garden path. And a lot of people get stuck and it's very dangerous. So just be aware of that. So what do I do? So I now really specialize in emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence, okay, mental and emotional health. I work a lot with people, all different types. And if you go to my website, right on the first page, you'll see a list of all kinds of different topics I work with. And it's a talking therapy, but it's also practical because I give people work to do in between sessions. It's very solution-based. So I am the type of teacher where my goal is to get you from A to B. Okay. So, and everybody's different. Some people only need me for 3 months. Some people only need me for 6 months. Some people work for me. The longest client I have at the moment is 2.5 years. And that's quite unusual. But, you know, and I warned him that there has to come a point where he's willing to move forward. And I can't, you know, because that's my job. My job is not to let people lean on me. No, I'm not here for that. I often get people that want to worship me as well. No, I'm not here for any of that nonsense either. I am basically here to help you to break free from anything that's holding you back. It's, you know, it's confidential service. I trained in basic counseling skills, so I know how to counsel. And I myself, so my work is powerful because I've gone through the depression, the sexual abuse, the doubting yourself, the, you know, the doing the drugs, the suicide attempts. I've gone through all of it. So I have a deep understanding of what it is to suffer and what stops people from moving forward. So they're very practical workshops. And I always start with the childhood because in my own experience and with all my clients as well, in the childhood is where you have that programming, that psychological childhood and life programming tends to happen predominantly between the ages of 0 up to 15. Okay, those years, and what you'll happen, and in those formative years, if you don't receive the mental and emotional support that you need, that's when the gaps develop in your own mental and emotional psyche. And then it doesn't normally become apparent until normally about 20s onwards. Yeah, in the 20s onwards is when it starts to break down. Because when you're a child, mind doesn't fully formulate until you're 19. So realistically, you could say we're children until we're 19 years of age. And after that is when we actually start to slowly enter adulthood. So I specialize, I mean, I'm very honest. I mean, you can see from these podcasts, I'm a very honest person. I'm a very straight-talking person. When it comes to doing the sessions, obviously, I apply the correct pressure depending on whoever the person is. You know, there are some people who don't want to be honest with themselves. And so I will gently nudge them to look at the truth. Obviously, these sessions don't work for people who don't want to be helped because nobody can help anybody that doesn't want to be helped. You have to want to, you know, transform and move forward in life. If you don't want to do that, then nobody can help you. That's fine. That's your choice. You know, you have free will. If you are happy just going around in circles, well, good for you. It's not my place to change that, yeah? But if you're a person and you've reached a point, what I normally find with human beings is that before they reach that point of transformation, they have to reach a point of, I've had enough. I don't want this anymore. I'm done. I want something better than this. I deserve better than this. I don't want any more shit. That's, you have to reach some kind of point where you're done with how you've lived and you want to be better. And then that's when, you would maybe look for somebody like myself. And there's many, I mean, I'm not for everybody. You may need a male counselor that, and this is why there's so many of us now. So take your time, find the right person and connect with them, meet with them. And a good therapist, regardless of whether they're spiritual or not, should not be charging you for a first session, as in the preliminary consultation. They shouldn't, because that consultation is to find out if they're actually the right therapist for you. And you should go into those meetings with a long list of questions that you want to ask. And you should ask anything and everything that you want to. Don't be afraid to ask, okay? Because this person is either going to help your mental and emotional health, or they can actually break it as well if it's the wrong person. Because there's a lot of idiots out there. I'm sure you've met them. There are, unfortunately, there's a lot of good people too, but there's a lot of idiots. So choose wisely. But yeah, find a client. I would probably choose like five or six people. Call them, get online, and you want to see them. Don't just do it on the phone. You want to look at their face. You want to see their expressions. Are they listening to you when you're asking them questions? All that stuff. And it should be at least 30 minutes or so, and you shouldn't pay for it. You shouldn't need to pay for it. And you'll know, and that counsel will know if you're right for each other. There has to be a synergy between the two of you. Yeah, it's very important. Because you're going to be talking about very deep and powerful stuff, right? I mean, what do you think, Tim? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done counselling 4 times and I've paid for one of them. And actually, I've paid for two of them. I've done kind of 4 cycles. And I've done a basic counselling course online as well. And I think it's very, very important that you feel confident to talk to the person, that you work out how they are. Usually after the first session, you'll have a good feeling of where you're going with that person. And I think that that's really important. And most importantly, the fact that you're going for counselling, the fact that you've made that decision to go is really important. But the way you feel after 1 or 2 sessions, that is really important as well. I know quite a few people who've given up because they said that they weren't getting anything from it and the counsellor wasn't very good. I said, well, what did you do next? But
Well, yeah. Sorry,
generally
can I just say
speaking,
that?
yeah.
Sorry, can I just interrupt there? If that happens to people, okay, can I please just make this point? Sorry, Tim, to interrupt
It's
you. I
fine.
don't like him. I just want to say, don't give up. All it means is that person's not the right one for you. It doesn't mean that you can't be helped, because people, unfortunately, when you're going through that trauma and then you go to a counselor and you see they're an idiot, it's off-putting and you think that you can't be helped and no one can help you. It's not true. It's an illusion. That's your trauma trying to keep you isolated and stopping you from moving forward. Don't fall for it. It's just a sign that that particular person was not the right counselor for you. Don't give up. Keep looking and sit down and think and make a list. For example, put the word counselor. Do you prefer to work with a man or a woman? Let's get that off the bat, because that's going to affect, personally me as a woman, I'd probably work with a woman. Okay, that's just me. So it doesn't matter. It's what works for you. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. You've got to think about what's going to work for you. So the gender of the person. Then you might want to look at what type of therapy, because there are so many different therapies. Then you might want to look at the person's experience. Now, some therapists, some psychologists, psychiatrists, the counselors, they haven't gone through a lot in their own lives. They haven't. They've only done it by going to university. So for some people that works. It doesn't mean that they're not a good counselor. It doesn't mean any of that. But then there are other counselors who aren't as qualified, but they've gone through a lot themselves. So you've got to understand what type of person do you want to be with? Is it somebody that you want more? I mean, for example, I would say myself personally, I'm qualified, but I haven't done the whole, I haven't gone to master's degree and PhDs and all this bullshit. I was going to do that, but God very clearly made it known that no, you're to remain authentic. You're to do it in this way, because the common person, the average person, they don't need all that shit. They just need somebody who gets it. and who genuinely cares. And that's another thing you want to look out for, somebody who genuinely cares, because there's some idiots out there who are only interested in the money. And I did a session a couple of weeks ago here in the Canaries, and I called out these fools, and I said to them, anybody working in a caring profession who's doing it for the bloody money, can you do the world a favor and leave? Go and do what it is that you really want to do, because being a care profession is not it. You know it, and I know it. Get out of that job and give that job and let somebody who genuinely cares be in that role. Because I'm sure you're all aware of the doctors, the nurses, the counselors who don't give a shit. They make your life a living hell, and we don't need it. So please, please, please take your time. Don't give up, okay? It does work. I'm living proof that it works. Tim is living proof that it works. You know, talking therapy, counseling, and there's so many different forms of therapy. It does help you. And once you go through it, then you, when you get to the other side of it, you can start becoming your own therapist, because then you can start looking at and exploring different modalities. There's art therapy, there's music therapy, oh man, there's swimming therapy, there's even therapy with horses, especially in Liverpool. There's an amazing place in Liverpool, actually. I can't have to look for the name for it, and I'll email it to you, Tim. There's an amazing charity in Liverpool, an amazing woman who uses abandoned horses. She gives them homes, and you can go there, and she works with people with mental and emotional health issues. She's amazing. I'll get in contact with her. She'd be a good one for you to have on your show. I'll find out, because it's years ago, because I don't live in Liverpool anymore. It's quite a while ago, but I'll find her. She does amazing work,
That
and
sounds
she
really
helps.
interesting. I mean, the counsellors I've seen very quickly, you establish your rapport, and the ones that were free, like beggars can't be choosers, to a degree, you can actually say, I think I want to see someone else if you want to. But I went in with a few ideas of what I wanted to discuss, and everything was on the table. And so when I went in there, I was like, right, I want to get better. And you very quickly establish that rapport. And, I've said as well, I think I mentioned this on the last one, people go talk about costs, etc. And you can go every 2 weeks, for example, which is like twice in like a calendar month. They're always around that. And I would urge anyone who, at any stage of their life, I'd say to everyone in the world that you probably need a mentor or a coach anyway, because there's things we just don't see. And it's really turned my life around, my experiences of counselling and coaching. And also I've studied a bit of coaching and mentoring when I did a master's. I found that quite interesting. That was to do with working with people in education. But it is really interesting and get inquisitive. And if you want to get better, A, acknowledge it, and B, do something about it, and never, ever, ever give up. There are people out there who can help, and there are things out there that can help you as well, but you do need to be wary. Kieran, I feel like I could speak to you for 1,000 years and we still wouldn't get there. But I think we're pretty much coming up on 90 minutes, so we'll leave it there. We have discussed other potential topics in the future, which we might come back to, like a particular issue to look at in detail. But I think your kind of autobiography fitted in with your kind of views on things. And I mean, we've covered so much. I think it's a very good in-depth discussion about so many things. And this idea of never giving up on finding your place in the world, I think it's something that, we should constantly be striving for, and we should not give up on, and we shouldn't lose that in all the flotsam and jetsam of the modern world. So thanks so much for coming on. You're a real inspiration. But the way you put things and the way you speak, it's very, very insightful, and I've really enjoyed listening to you. I've learned a lot from you, and I know a bit about some of these things. But we'll put your details in the podcast notes. Thanks for giving up so much of your time. Best of luck for the future, and I hope to work with you again in the future and have you on talking about other things. So, is there anything you want to say just before we finish?
Thank you, Tim. I love talking with you. It's really interesting. I love your insight. I think it's very valuable. And thank you for everybody who's listening. And I really hope that these podcasts are helping people out there, and that they're inspiring you. That's the point of them. So good luck to everybody, and all the best to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I will speak to you soon. Cheers.